You're listening to Spilling Ink.
Spilling Ink is brought to you by Bookbranders, your self-publishing concierge.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another special live edition of Spilling Ink. I, of course, am your host, Jason Lavelle, and I'm going solo tonight as far as hosting goes because Katie is off on a family vacation and Jane is off on family stuff, and so it's just me, but that's okay because we all know that I am your favorite anyway. We have an amazing guest that I'm going to introduce you to in just a moment, but I do want to give you a little word from our sponsor, Bookbranders. Bookbranders is your self-publishing concierge. It is a company that is made just to help indie authors. They help you with all that pesky stuff like formatting, editing, design work, even website design, and they're pretty reasonably priced. You can check them out at bookbranders.com. Super easy to find them. And when you sign up or even go to the website, I'm pretty sure they give you a free 10-step guide to self-publishing. So free stuff is always good, and that's great. And I know that Katie has worked with Bookbranders, so she can vouch for them as being a very cool company. But tonight, we have with us the most relevant content creator in the world, Mr. Russell Nolte.
That's very funny. That's funny. It's only going to be, it's only funny to me and you because of what we talked about before. But thank you so much for having me on.
It's great to have you. So Russell is an artist and businessman that I follow. And I follow him with great interest because he always has some very not only amusing but important things to say. But for those of you who don't know Russell, could you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do? Because you've got a lot of balls up in the air.
Sure. I'm gonna try and keep this really simple. I'm an author. I write mostly fantasy, but also sci-fi and mystery. I'm most well known for my graphic novels, Ichabod Jones Monster Hunter, Katrina Hates Dead Shit, and Pixie Dust, along with my anthologies that I edit and curate, which is Monsters and Other Scary Shit and Cthulhu is Hard to Spell, which just launched last year. But I plan on launching 18 novels this year. I wrote 15 novels last year, and I have a total of 21 novels that I'm ready to release once a couple of them come back from the proofreader. So additionally, I used to have a podcast called The Business of Art, which has been rebranded as The Complete Creative, which is the brand that I have to help creatives build better businesses. So I have a blog at thecompletecreative.com, and I do epic blog posts, little posts, really just to help creatives build better businesses. And our motto is make the best work of your life and share it with the world.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And, you know, I've read a lot of your, even your daily Facebook posts, which aren't just daily. They're like 2-3 a day sometimes. And they're often somewhere between, you know, a quiet chat with a friend and a hardcore rant about something that's going on. But I always wonder, how in the heck do you find time to do all of this? I mean, are you just working all the time, 24 hours a day?
No, that is a very common misconception. I work from about 7 a.m. till 2-3 p.m. And then I'm mostly done. Sometimes I don't hit my word count for the day, or sometimes I have to go over that. But most of the time I'm working about 7 to 3. I do like reading, and I do like reading research. So I tend to do those in my off hours just because I like it. But my job is to write a lot. So I have trained myself to write 5,000 words a day of fiction. And when you write 5,000 words a day of fiction, nonfiction is much easier. Like, fiction is creating worlds and characters and how they go together. Nonfiction is mostly just taking ideas in my head and like developing nice anecdotes for them. So I find the nonfiction very easy to write, especially because it's about 300 to 500 words. And I've been blogging since 2007. So, and I just, you have to put out a lot of content to remain relevant. So I've just trained myself to be able to put out a lot of good work just put out a lot of work, and I've learned how to do it in a way that my brain allows me to make a lot of it in a short period of time. I used to only be able to write 1,000 words a day. Writing one blog post was really, really hard. But as time went on, I just learned that you have to write a lot faster than I did. And if I wanted to make a living as a novelist, I had to learn how to write a lot more books in a shorter amount of time. And so in doing that training and training my body to do 5,000 words a day, sometimes up to 8 or 10,000 words a day, it became a lot easier to do the rest of what I had to do. I mean, taking 5,000 words a day and translating it into 200-300 word blog posts is like almost nothing by comparison.
So can we assume that this is your full-time job then?
Yes, it's been my full-time job since the middle of 2015. Yes, 2015. I run a company called Wannabe Press, which publishes books, mostly my own books, but also anthologies. I own a Verizon dealership, and then I run the two companies, The Complete Creative, which does book marketing for people as well as courses and such, and then my own fiction work as well.
Okay. Well, I want to come back to your book marketing courses that you do in a little bit here. But did you put out a nonfiction book about writing as well, or about business?
Yeah, it's called Sell Your Soul, How to Build Your Creative Career. It was based on, so I used to have a podcast called The Business of Art, as I think I mentioned. And it was kind of everything that I learned from doing about 100 interviews with guests, very successful guests that you would recognize, like Jim Zub and Richard Starkings, and new people who were just breaking in. Also from my own career, successful career, and then research on hundreds of other creatives. So it was basically broken down into 5 sections: making great content, the basics of sales. So I teach sales funnels and such, customer avatars, and then how to build an audience from scratch, how to sell at live events, and then how to launch products successfully. And in if you can master those 5 points, I think you can have a successful, very successful creative career.
Well, and just as an aside here, we have a comment on the chat here from Derek Bourne, who said, a lot of times when I go to even try to create the extra content, like a blog article, etc., I have that people will actually care about that. You know, did you have to overcome those kind of fears yourself?
So your audience of between one being like puppy dogs and 10 being like incredibly honest, like is it a 9 to 11 is basically the range that I run into. Is that okay with like you guys? I'm gonna get really like brutally honest here.
Be brutally honest, man.
Nobody cares about what you do. You should just get over that now. Nobody cares. Like not only do people hate your work, they are indifferent to it, which is way worse. Like at least when they hate it, it means they know who you are.
Oh, I'm sorry,
but 95% of people don't care at all. So I don't think about that. So that's just for anybody. That's not just that's for everyone from Stephen King down to me and down to, I don't know, my dog. Every human, like most people, even at Stephen King's level, they don't care about him. Like they don't actively hate him. They actively nothing him, and don't even actively nothing him. They passively nothing him. So in order to break through that barrier, there's a mindset shift that you need. And that mindset shift is that you have to not give a shit about the people that don't care. You have to care desperately and deeply about the 1 in 1,000 people who really care about what you have to say. And you have to do everything in your power to find that 1 in 1,000 person. And when you're able to do that, you're able to talk very specifically and use words and language that those people actually respond to. And now, most people that hear me talk think that I'm either somewhere between too forward to too much of a downer to just a complete jerk. And that's okay. I am not trying to convert everybody. What I am trying to do is change the lives of a select few people who will hear this message right now or through the replay and go, oh my God, it is so accurate what he's saying. Why hasn't anybody said it like that before? Now, in order to do that, I have to understand that 99 out of 100 people, 95 out of 100 people will literally just zone out. They won't care at all. A couple of people will hate it, but most people will passively nothing it, which is the worst feeling in the world because it makes you feel like you are worthless. But if you can just find that one human and start talking very earnestly to them, you can then turn that one human into 10,000 humans. It's not that hard to go from zero, one human to 10,000 humans, as long as you have the one human. Because if one of 1,000 people love your message, well, there's 7 billion people in this world. There's so many people that you could find 10,000 people to care about you. And when I moved from caring about what people thought to desperately wanting to change the lives of the few people who really cared, I was able to start making progress.
You know, listening to your podcast and reading your posts, I often thought that, wow, some of these are kind of jagged pills to try to get down. However, they're also jagged pills that we need to swallow. We need to understand. And to address you directly, Derek, I think that if you are focusing on that 1 in 1,000 people that you're trying to connect with, that might help you be a little bit more focused in what you're writing for that blog post or for that Facebook post even that you're writing. You know, kind of help you hone in on exactly what you want to say if you're not trying to appeal to everybody.
Right. So if you know the one person, so I generally write to what I wanted to know when I was 28 and struggling, when I just wanted someone to tell me the straight truth. I just wanted someone to tell me how to cut through all the clutter. And so now I talk and a lot of my blog posts are about like, well, will Russell want to hear that? And a lot of my mailing list, you know, our mailing list is now 25,000 people, and it's been as high as 85,000 people at times. But I still am focused on the one person. I am focused on the one person, and I write it to one human.
Who is
and
that
I write mean? My books for one human. So you saw this before, but like this is the amalgamation of that human. Her name's Melissa. She's our mascot, Melissa the Wannabe. She's amazing. She's rebellious, creative, artistic, practical, and no nonsense. However, there are human beings in my audience that I write to often. I won't name them here, but there's many people that like I know that when I go to shows, I'm as excited to see them as I am my best friends. And I write a lot of this stuff to them. Like often when I'm writing, I'm like, well, Jen will like that. Cullen will like that. Veronica will like that. I'm going to put this in there just for them. And people like really respond to that because suddenly you're not talking to a bunch of humans. You're talking to one person. And every time you send an email, no matter how many people it is, no matter how many people, whether there's one person listening right now or 100,000 people listening, I don't change the message because I'm talking to each of them directly, indirectly, but I'm talking to myself when I was 28.
That's heavy, man. Well, and you know, talking to you like this, reminds me of something that you said on one of your podcast episodes, and you might have said it more than once. You said that you felt like you were a generally unlikable guy, yet you had learned how to become likable enough to sell your content. And I haven't really thought of you as a generally unlikable guy. What gave you that impression?
Well, life. Like, I've known me for 36 years. Most people have only known me for a year or two. I learned something a few years ago called the attractive character. It is the idea that you become a magnet. You become the kind of person that will magnetize the perfect people to you. So it means shaving off the pieces that those people don't like and amplifying the pieces that people don't like. So that when you plant yourself, like drop yourself like a magnet, the right pieces are going to come to you and the wrong ones you're going to repel away from you. And it cuts a lot of time from my life. So I don't have to worry about convincing somebody that they're going to like my stuff. There's that are never going to like it. I like to say, like, out of every five people you talk to. So out of 100 people that you holler at, you'll maybe talk to five of those people. One of them will love your stuff, even if you punch them in the face. One of them will hate your stuff, even if you give them a gold brick. And my goal is to find this person immediately. And then get this person away immediately. So I don't even have to worry about them. And I only have to worry about these three people in the middle here who are on the fence. Now, you can have a pretty good career just talking to these people, this one of five people. But the real success comes, you can convert the two, the three, and the four people to at least try your message, to at least try what you have to say. But I have spent many years honing a persona that 28-year-old Russell would respond to and would wake them up. But for most of my life, the bluntness that people respond to was just anger. Mm-hmm. So like there was a part of me that was, it was just straight negative. And while I often go negative, I always try to come back around to a positive at the end. But for many years, most of my life, that positive at the end was not there. It was just straight negative about how everything was the worst. So I spent a lot of time working on myself. And I think, Derek, the most important thing that I did was work on myself, worked on me, and got happy with who I was, and then understood objectively that some people like that person. And if they were not stupid, which I don't think that my wife or my friends are stupid, I don't think the people that read my books are stupid. So if they like me, there must be something about me that is likable. And I had to pull that out of myself and understand that those people care about me. And if they care about me, then other people will also care about me too. I don't know. I hope that's helpful.
No, I think it is. I really think it is. And as long as we're on a brutal honesty kick, I want to talk about something else that you posted. And, it's probably bringing up old material for you, but I thought it was really interesting. And that is something that a lot of you watching are not going to like to hear, but don't write your dream book first, something along those lines.
Yeah. So I don't know why people do this, because this goes back to another thing that I said. Like, do you ever listen to This American Life?
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan, but I like Ira Glass. And he has a quote that is in my book, Sell Your Soul, and How to Build Your Creative Career. And it's along the lines of, when you start, you have good taste, but you are not skilled enough to meet that taste. You cannot put out what you think in your brain. It's not possible for you. You have not developed the skill set. And so as you grow in your career, you will be able to somewhat match what you have in your head. It won't always happen, but you're closer. I still don't get what I had exactly in my head, but like I'm pretty close usually. Like usually I'm at least satisfied. And so when you do your dream project first, you're shooting yourself in the foot because you suck. You're the worst at something. You're the worst. You're not good. And like, when you think about your dream project, the thing that you want your legacy to be, why would you make that when you're at your worst? And now, look, everyone at one point in their life has been the worst writer in the world. Stephen King was, Tom Clancy was, J.K. Rowling was. You might think they're still the worst writer in the world. They're not. They're all very talented. Anyone who could do this and get paid for it is very talented, like Stephen King said. But when you try and make your dream product first, everything becomes precious. And these are the people that end up rewriting everything. They end up rewriting and rewriting and rewriting, and nothing is good enough. But the skill comes in finishing a bunch of products. So when you're starting your career, it is better, objectively, to write stuff you don't give a crap about, because then you can just finish it. And if it's not good, who cares? Like, you don't care. Even you don't care if it's good. Now, sometimes you will have a gem. My book, My Father Didn't Kill Himself, came from a screenplay I wrote called I'm Going to Kill Myself in 2007. And it was not very good, but it became a very good book that is much beloved. So whenever I go into a new line of writing, I always think, well, how can I get the garbage out first? What can I do to just like not feel too precious about this? Because then I'm going to get hung up, and I don't care if the thing is bad. I care that I'm going to get hung up doing the bad thing. And frankly, I've written over 20 books at this point. You know, I've been a six-figure earner. I've like done $25,000 Kickstarters. I've launched books really, really successfully. And even I don't feel like I am ready to take on my dream project yet. I'm putting together something that will be what I hope will be my dream project.
I was going to say, do you have an idea for that dream project?
Yes, I think so. Well, I have two ones that I really want to do that are very near and dear to my heart. But yes, I have 21 book covers that I'm ready to like, that I'm working on right now, working through. But I just, when people tell me that they are not, that they were struggling to finish their first book, it almost always comes back to that they think that book is too precious, that it has to be too perfect. Mm-hmm. When I wrote my first book in 2012, I think it was, I had written a bunch of screenplays and some comics. So what I did was I said, okay, so I understand structure. I understand character and dialogue. I'm not very good at prose. So the first book that I wrote was a mystery novel, a middle grade mystery novel, because the sentence structures are short and the books are short. And I did it based on a screenplay that I had optioned. So I knew the structure was pretty good already. After that, I mentioned I'd been blogging since 2007. So I wanted to make something more aged up. Then the book was called Gumshoes, The Case of Madison's Father. Again, but people really like that book. I really like that book. I maxed out my competency level at that book. Then the next time I wrote a book called My Father Didn't Kill Himself. It was a mystery novel told in blog posts. I've been blogging since 2007. So I was able to understand the structure of what I wanted and make really good blog posts. Make it feel like the character, and still like up my game with and max out my level of writing. So, and then after that, I wrote a book called Spaceship Broken Needs Repairers, which I've since pulled down, and I'm going to re-release it as a book. It's called Sorry for Existing this year. And it was my first YA like novel. It was a straight novel. So I believe that you should try and create the best product that you can with the skills that you have, because then you keep increasing your skills and eventually you'll be able to write that 120,000 word epic novel over 10 books. But like, have you ever met a novelist who liked their first work? I haven't. If I ever did, I would call them crazy.
You know, here's a question for you. So I like this idea of you're always writing to capacity, but then you're growing and doing it again and growing more each time. You know, what do you think about, because Stephen King has some ideas about this as well in his On Writing book. And I remember reading that years ago, and I love the book, except for he had, we existed on different tiers in his book. And there was no way for, you know, a mediocre writer to ever become a great writer, you know, no matter how hard they tried. But there was a way for a mediocre writer to become an okay writer, that type of thing. What do you think about that idea? Do you think that we're limited by what we're born with in some ways? Or do you think we all have kind of the potential to rise above where we are at this time? I love that face.
I think what matters is what's important to understand in this is the goal to be the best writer in the world, or is it to be the best writer for your audience? So I think that this is going to sound weird because I seem like the kind of person who would love everything Stephen King ever wrote, but I'm not a big fan of his. I find his writing kind of like, it just does not connect with me. And then in the way that George R. R. Martin's work does not connect with me. It just is not a thing that is like, I understand the skill of that kind of writing, but I like my characters. I like my narrators to be more invested in the story, and they tend to be very objective in the way that they write. And it's not the best writing for me. So if you were to rank every writer in the world that's ever existed, I think that probably some people are greater than others in their ability to write literary prose. And there's probably a max of my, there's a max in my skill. I know.
You're being nice right now. I can see that you're restraining yourself. I don't know why you're doing it.
I'm going to say this thing. I don't think anybody would say that 50 Shades of Grey was a well-written book. I don't think, if you were to take it, I mean, every critic thinks it's not a great written book. I don't think many people think Twilight was a great written piece of literature. I don't think people generally consider romance novels to be high literature or great writing. Now, I read romance novels, and so I think that some romance novels connect with me and some do not connect with me, and I see the talent in some. But there are, like, if you say, is any of those novels equal to a book like Catcher in the Rye or Catch 22 or The Great Gatsby or some other great Expectations, War and Peace, whatever, like, your great piece of literary writing is, I think those people probably have a skill level that is higher capacity than other people do. Now, does it matter? Like, because I don't care if I'm one of the best writers. I care about being the best writer that I can be and a writer that connects with you. A writer that connects with the people who desperately care about my work. And most of the independent writers get completely shat on for the skill level that they have in their writing. I remember when Amanda Hawking got a $1 million book deal and people were like, that's just paranormal romance garbage. And I was like, I don't know, man. By my definition, she's a great writer. She got paid $1 million to write stuff. Like, she basically doesn't have to work again. Like, what? Like, why? Like, why are you like, I think it's just I don't think it's a good argument, because skill level, like, what is the difference in skill level between somebody that sells like $1 million books and $1.2 million books? I don't know. Probably not that much. Like, what's the skill difference in skill level between like Mark Dawson and Lee Child? I don't know. Like, we have like, do we need to have that discussion? Like, do we need to like cap people out at like at whatever the level of talent that they have? Should we cap them out to how much they can connect with an audience? Because if you cap people out at their skill level at connecting to an audience, like, I would say that E.L. James is one of the best writers of the 21st century.
The dollars would back that claim.
I mean, I know lots of people. I mean, romance is the number one category. Thrillers is number two. Would anybody consider those two like great works of literature? Like, are we going to put like Elmore Leonard's books, as much as I love them, in like a great, the top 100 novels of all time? No, we're not going to do that. Like, I mean, I'm not saying of like your favorite. I mean, the top 100 novels. I just don't think that's going to happen. That does not matter. Like, why does that matter? Like, why even make that claim? Because it puts a cap on people's ability to create. I also work with a lot of artists, and like, I know a lot of artists who are technically average artists, but the work connects with people, and I love it. I mean, look at a webcomic like Sarah Scribbles or XKCD. Like, skill-wise, that they should never be like have gotten any success, but like their ability to connect with people is a different skill. It's not no skill. It's not like they are still great creators. It's just like the skill level necessary to create that, to like, anybody can go and create XKCD. Like, it's stick figures and like weird esoteric art. Cyanide and Happiness is like, it's, but the way that they put it together in a package resonates with a lot of humans. And so if your question, if you are asking, is there a cap on your skill level? I would say there's probably a cap on your skill level, but I would caveat that by saying, who the shit cares? Like, go look at the most successful books of all time. Most successful books, not the best written books. And many of them, I just named two, would be like, people, most people go, I can't believe that that's one of the most popular books.
Well, you know, and I'll tell you what, as someone who has read both all the Twilight books and all the Shades of Grey books, I can completely agree with you. They aren't the most well-written pieces of fiction out there. They certainly aren't. And they've gotten trash-talked by a lot of people. However, the $100 million in sales kind of says something different. And the fact that I read them all, and my wife read them all, and most of our friends have read them all, it's like, okay, well, yeah, who gives a shit? If they're entertaining, they're entertaining. But there's also something else that you talked about that you think is more important than sheer talent, and that's point of view, right?
Yes. So your point of view is something that is uniquely yours. So this is why I hate right to market. Like, I get it. I understand right to market, and theoretically it's a concept that makes sense. But like, most writers on Amazon are interchangeable, because they follow this idea of writing to market. They follow that, like, oh, well, these are the 7 plot points I have to hit, and it's mermaids this week, and so I'm just going to copy and paste. Like, do you ever read a lot of like things in the same genre? Just be like, I don't even know who wrote this. Like, I feel like I've written this. And this was a traditionally published book. I feel like I read a book yesterday and I was like, have I read this before? I was like, no, it just was like the almost exact book that I had read like 6 months ago. Different name.
I read a Dan Brown and a Clive Cussler that were nearly identical at one point. And I was like, holy crap, how did this happen? But yeah, anyhow.
Right, so that's fine if you're going to write to market and always chase the next market. I don't care about that. I want to have a bunch of people who desperately care about my work. And in my work, my point of view is something that nobody else has. Like, I combine mythology, science fiction, fantasy, mystery, drama, horror, and comedy together in a thing. And like, it's a thing that I do. And my first manager was like, well, what kind of book is this? And I was like, I don't know, man. It's the thing that I do. If you like the thing that I do, you're going to like it. If you don't like the thing that I do, you don't. Now, do they follow tropes of genres? Like when I write in dark fantasy, do they follow some tropes of dark fantasy? Yes, but they also overturn some of the tropes of dark fantasy. And like the thing that nobody else has is your point of view. Like, and you have to understand that other people also care about your point of view. It's just you have to go out and find them. And this brings me to something I've been obsessed with recently, which is the idea of easier versus better. So it is easier to write to market. It is easier to go on Kindle Unlimited and put in a reverse harem paranormal romance about, I think it's mermaids, the last couple of months have been popular.
I hate the reverse harems.
But that is the thing. If you want to get six, the most people are searching for that right now. But the problem is, especially on Amazon, is like once you read a book, it's just like, do you even remember who the author is? No, like you just like it's not. There's not a piece of thing in your hand. You're just like okay, well, it's done now. So it's easier to do that. But I am unconvinced that it is better because in the short term, you've made money. In the long term, you've not helped build your own brand or you've not helped like move your own career along in a significant way. So writing books in your point of view is much harder because it generally will not be to market. But it will be more fun for you and it will garner a more devoted audience who cares about your work, not just another mermaid reverse harem book. And look, I got friends who write to market. I got like their books are fine. Books are fine. They're fine. And they enjoy writing them. And because like, luckily some of these people really have liked reverse harem for a long time. And they just are like, they're like, yes, it's a thing that's popular. And if you can James Cameron your career, awesome. Because like James Cameron makes movies that he really cares about that happen to align with the audience in a very, very significant way. The same thing with Michael Bay. Their audience, they're like their movies and their audience happen to be like overlap very well. But that's not most people. And the truth is the most people are going to find a few thousand people, 5,000, 10,000 people that grok to the thing that they do. And like, if you can make a very good career on that kind of output, and for those fans. But if you constantly are trying to mold your point of view to what other people want, then you're gonna get lost, and your books are gonna be, I don't want to say boring because sometimes they're exciting, but like they're gonna be less you, and it's gonna start feeling like a job. So the thing that you can do that's most powerful in your career is find your own voice. I don't know if people who have me on podcasts like having me on podcasts. I don't know if the people that listen to the podcast get a lot out of it. But I do know that they're going to be like, that guy was like no other guy that was been on this podcast for 100 episodes. I know that. Like that part I know. And so I'm okay with someone going, oh yeah, I heard you on this podcast. You were freaking crazy. Even if 50 people don't.
you know, when I asked you to come on the show, it's funny that you said that, because I emailed one of our co-hosts and I'd be like, I can't wait for you to meet this guy, because he's not like anybody else you've ever talked to. Right. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that having tons of different points of view and tons of opinions really helps to improve us as not only as humans, but as creatives. We've been talking a lot about stuff that you've already posted, and looking at our chat here, we have Joe Compton from Go Indie Now, who's also on here, and of course we have lots of friends that do podcasts and shows as well, as I'm sure you do, and you've been very successful in your business. You know, you had a podcast that produced 200 episodes. You've got a massive blog, and you've got a series of courses that you're developing now. You know, and I think that something that a lot of us as podcasters want to know is, how do we reach more people? How do we become more successful? You know, I think on this show, we are really all about just being who we are and chatting with authors and trying to have a good time and give people good advice. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I'm not seeing our numbers really grow a whole lot. You know, we don't have a ton of new subscribers every week. You know, how did you take your show from, you know, being just starting out to something that was really successful?
Well, I would not call my podcast successful. I think we capped out at about 250 subscribers, like maybe 500 every once in a while. So I wouldn't call that massively successful. I will say that when it came to scale, so I have a course called Build a Rabid Fan Base. And in it, we talk about finding your perfect human, surveying them to get so that you're creating the products they're guaranteed to love because they've told you what they love. And then like automating, how to turn potential customers into rabid fans, and then how to scale it. So that's what I'm good. That's the framework that I'm going to use to discuss this. So the first two parts are really important. You have to know who your human is, because I have a Twitter account that's got almost 30,000 useless people that follow it. They're useless. They're not useless. They're useless to me because, like, I built it without knowing who I was talking to. I built it just willing, and it grew. It's like, look, 30,000 people, and I post something, I get like one heart or whatever the function is. My Instagram is better. My Facebook is way better because I've honed what my message is to the human being. I've talked to actual human beings who listen to my show and buy my books. And I said, well, why do you like that? I don't get it. Why do you like that? That doesn't make any sense to me. Like, you like it, so you're not stupid. Tell me what you like about it. And then I just kept molding things to what they wanted. And it was a combination of, so my business is really simple. As you see these two books back here, so this is my book, Monsters and Other Scary Shit, which was our first anthology. It was created it launched in 2017 and raised $27,000 on Kickstarter. And but it only existed because the year before I went to people and I said, I don't have a book coming out for a couple of years that's a graphic novel. I want to do an anthology. What's your favorite thing? And they were like, monsters. And I was like, okay, cool. I know a bunch of people who make monster things, making monster things myself. I said, what kind of, who's your favorite cover artist? And they were like, well, I like Invader Zim. And so I hired Aaron Alexievich, who draws for Invader Zim, to do the cover, both of these anthologies. And I said, what kind of indie creators do you like? And they told me, and I made sure to get them. And I made sure to find a bunch of people who, of creators who, across the spectrum, all had like relatively okay audiences or Kickstarters or books that were already out that did monster stuff. And I invited them and I was like, I want to make this big monster anthology right here. Monsters and Other Scary Shit. Did pretty good for me. 627 backers or something like that. $27,000. But then I said, okay, cool. So what did you like and not like about this book? And they said, well, I didn't like that it was just all monsters. And I said, cool, what fandom do you like? Well, I like Cthulhu and Lovecraft. So this was number one. This is my number one fandom for my fans, Lovecraft. And then they said, I didn't like that it was black and white in color. And I said, okay, I'm going to make it all color. They said, I didn't like that it was that there's curse words in it. Cool. Took the curse words out. Took the blood out. Made it so you can talk, bring it to anybody. Then I launched it a year later. And this one did pretty good. This one, $39,000. 1,039 backers, I think it ended up being. So, and this one also got a publishing deal. Once it was done, a publisher came to me and asked me to publish it. And I said, go for it. I like you. Let's do it. And so this one massively more successful than this. Now, I'm going to tell you the reverse story of unsuccessful. So I had a book called Katrina's Hates Dead Shit that came out in 2015. It's about a girl who gets sick of living during the apocalypse. She sets out to hell to kill the devil. Massively popular book as far as, like, for me, it was the most popular ever done. It single-handedly kept me in business for 2 years. Awesome. It still sells really, really well. It's great. However, then I went and I made a book called My Father Didn't Kill Himself, which I think I've talked about before. I went from $8,500 at launch all the way down to $3,400 at launch. Then I made a book called I Can't Stop Tooting, a Love Story, which was a kid's book about farting. From $3,000, I went down all the way down to $2,000. Now, that is not a good trend line, right? So, and figuring out what they wanted was basically, oh, you like that? What do you want? Here it is. And then once I had the relationship between my finding a whole crap ton of people, throwing them through a funnel, introducing them to me, saying all the things, having them read my work so that some of them would come out the other side as fans. And now you can do all sorts of things to optimize it, optimize that like funnel and make 5% instead of 4% come out of fans. But generally you just throw a crap ton of people, go to all the shows, I spend thousands of dollars on advertising, just trying to throw a bunch of people through a wood chipper. And so some of them come out the other side. And so once you have your message honed and you know exactly what you're making, who you're making it for, and how and what and the kinds of messaging that they like to go from potential customer to rabid fan, after that, you just have to throw a crap ton of people in a chipper shredder and some of them will come out as fans the other side. I know there's a lot of nuance to it. There's tons of, like, that's why the course is 5 hours instead of, I don't know, 3 minutes, like I just did it in. But, like, it really comes down to, like, ask them what they want, make it, they're your fan. So figuring out why they're a fan, what words that you say, what is the best pitch, and then just finding a crap ton of people who are likely to like your thing. For instance, we talked about Stephen King before. I am likely to like Stephen King books. I generally do not like Stephen King books. They're not my favorite books. I enjoy them, but they're not like my favorite books. So people who are likely to like your thing and then be like, hey, you like Stephen King. You'll probably like this for these reasons. You should try it. Here's a free thing. Here's a thing. Here's why I'm cool. And then some of them will come out the other side as fans. And then your job is just to optimize that so the most amount of people come out as fans. And you're targeting the right shows and the right other people. Does that make sense?
It does. And I actually had I had kind of a revelation in the last few months here because, you know, a lot of my friends go and do Comic-Cons and other book conventions and expos, things like that, to try to sell books. And I'm like, you know, I don't feel like I fit in with a lot of these crowds. You know, I'm more comfortable going as press and interviewing people. But then I learned that there's such a thing as paranormal conventions. And they have them all over the place. And I'm like, wow, I write paranormal suspense. I was like, you know, I bet I would really connect with these people. I bet these are the, I bet these are my humans, because I haven't met my humans yet. So I'm going to, I'm signing up to do a couple of these paracons that are coming up, and I'm really hopeful about it because, you know, like you said, not everybody is going to be your fan, and you kind of got to optimize how you do things. And so I'm like, you know what, I'm not going to, not going to dump a whole lot of money into this when I think that this might be a little bit better direction. I'm going to put my resources into these conventions and see how that turns out. But yeah, it's good, interesting stuff there.
Yeah. I mean, I did, so I do horror conventions, anime conventions, comic conventions, and book conventions, or I did when I did a lot more conventions. And like, you just kind of have to triangulate people and be where they are and be present. People really discount the value of showing up. Like nobody, very few people I know have a weekly mailing list or a daily blog or like things that people can come back to. It's like, well, how are you showing up? Like, how did you become friends with your friends? Generally, it's because you kept showing up and having similar interests.
Yeah. And you, that's something you do very well, at least on, cause I'm on Facebook more than anything else as far as social media goes. But, you know, as I said earlier, that's something you do very well on there. You're always putting new content on your Facebook and, it's engaging. I mean, you get a lot of comments, you get a lot of little reactions on there. And I think that's good because it keeps people thinking about Russell. You know, keeps
positively people, like positive think, like positive connotations about Russell.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, and you know, some of your posts may start out a little angry or negative, but I really do like how you try to wrap things up with some kind of positivity at the end. It's like, okay, man, I just read through all this stuff that's really rocking my world, but okay, there is hope for me in the end.
And that's how I write novels too. It's like full of hopelessness, but there's like hope in the hopelessness. That's my kind of like thing that I do in my books. And my theory has always been, if you like what I say, you'll probably like my books because like I write like I talk.
and I, you know, I've actually gotten some criticism for that because when I write it, it's very conversational, like common man conversational. I'm not a great literary writer. You know, I'm on my sixth novel now, and I'm miles and miles better than I was at book number one, but I'm still not phenomenal by any means. But I just, when it, even in my prose, I'm talking to people, and it's always me. It's always the same me. And I try not to deviate from that. And when I try to deviate from that, it completely falls flat. And I'm just like, oh my God, this chapter was just total shit. And I realize why. I realize, okay, I was forcing myself to do something that obviously wasn't right for me or my characters or my voice. And I'm glad that it was shit because now I can delete it before other people read it and think, what the hell was that?
Yeah, I'm very good at writing. And I like first person past. That's how I usually write books. Like sometimes I write in third person subjective past, but most of my books are in first person past. Tense, with like different, usually with female main characters, because like I find like if I write male main characters, they always end up like me. So it's, I don't know where I was going with that. So I'm just going to ask are there any other questions from the people that are listening, or are they just like, I can't believe this guy is still talking. That guy does not shut up ever, does he?
Oh, let's see. No new questions right now. Somebody commented Harvey Pekar, maybe that was what it was. I'm not sure what that was in reference to. Sorry, go indie now. I'm not sure where that came from.
He has a very distinct style that and generally angry. He's a generally angry, like
maybe that
writer.
Maybe that they were comparing you to, maybe.
Possibly. I don't know. I mean, maybe I guess they'll just have to like reply. And so I mean, I don't know. I got totally sidetracked off the train of thought. What was the? Did I answer the question that you had?
You might have. But we're running low on time, so I wanted you to kind of to also kind of plug yourself a little bit here and what you've got coming up and what you have to offer. I know we did that at the beginning, but I want to kind of talk a little bit about it because I know you've got a series of courses that you want to promote as well, right?
Well, I mean, if I think they are helpful. So I tier things as far as the more helpful something is, the more expensive it is. And the faster it can help you, the more expensive it is. But I want to give as much free stuff as possible. So I have a audience building seminar called, what do I call it? I used to call it Sell Cool Things, but people don't like the word sell. So it's a free audience building seminar, which you can get to at, hang on, I have them all listed down here. It's thecompletecreative.com/audience will get you to the free audience building seminar.
Hang on, Russell, could you say that one more time? Kind of your audio broke up just a little bit.
So my free audience building seminar is at thecompletecreative.com/audience. I also have, we didn't talk about Kickstarter, a free business course for creatives, which is 10 emails over 10 days at thecompletecreative.com/FBC. thecompletecreative.com/FBC for free business course. Also on my blog, I've done a couple of things for authors. So I have these things called epic blog posts, which are 3,000 to 7,000 word blog posts about topics, which hopefully are the definitive work on that topic. One of them is called The Secrets of Self-Publishing Success, which you can get to at thecompletecreative.com/self-published author. I talk all about sell through and read through and basically how to plan a successful creative career and especially for authors. And then this week I just launched one called The Difference Between KU and Wide Book Launching Strategies, because they're very different. And people always ask me about whether you should release on KU and or wide. And the truth is that it depends. It's dependent on the strategy that you use. So that one's at thecompletecreative.com/book launch. And then I have a bunch of other stuff. I have a big post on social media and Kickstarter and a whole bunch of other stuff. But I don't have a lot of daily blogs yet because I haven't launched the full site. I'm waiting to have a little bit more content put out. But the epic blog posts are basically a little mini course inside themselves. And then on thecompletecreative.com, I also have my old podcast, which has been rebranded as The Complete Creative, and links to it and my courses. So the most important things that you can take if you happen to have $500 is my course, Build a Rabid Fan Base, because it will tell you how to find your perfect human, make products that are guaranteed to sell, and then basically find new fans on autopilot. It's $100,000 of my failures in one course. So I like to say, it's like getting a year of your life back. I guess technically it's still $397 until Monday. On Monday, it goes up to $497. So you get a $100 discount, I guess, if you're listening to this between today and Monday morning.
That's a good deal to snag now then.
Well, it started as $197 last January, and it's incrementally gone up as people have seen success. So I've had dozens of people who've gotten done $15,000 book launches because of the course, who've launched their careers because of the course, who've doubled or tripled their sales because of the course and their fan base because of the course. It's the most impactful thing that I've ever done. But most people don't have just a spare $300 to $400 laying around. So I do also have a book, which is called Sell Your Soul, How to Build Your Creative Career, which is $5 on ebook form on Amazon and all the other retailers. It's a great place to start and get a sort of landscape view of what you would need to do to build your career, whether it's building an audience from scratch, selling at shows, launching products, all of the stuff we've been talking about this whole time. And it just is core. It doesn't necessarily, it gives you some strategy, but it's more like an overview of everything you had to do. And then from that, that's where I got people to tell me that they needed this one specific thing, which is where I developed the Build a Rabid Fanbase course. I also awesome. Write novels, but I don't think they're going to be as impactful for you right now. But my novels are also very good.
Well, is there a website for your novels?
Just my name, RussellNolte.com. And if you go to RussellNolte.com, you can sign up for our mailing list and get 4 free stories, including the first issues of Katrina Hates the Dead and Ichabod Jones Monster Hunter.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Russell,
and actually, I guess the first chapter of Sell Your Soul also.
You've got tons of free stuff to offer. I love that. That's great.
Look, man, I'm just trying to get people through the funnel. Like 1% of people in your audience are going to potentially buy from you. So like maybe you're hoping it's a 2%. God, it would be great if it was 5%. But like, really, you just want people to know, like, and trust you. And people don't pay for things really at the beginning. They want to test you out. So you have to have a lot of free things. And I frankly, like, if I could give it all away for free, I would. I can't. I had to eat. Like, yeah. I would give it all away for free if I could do so, but I just cannot do that.
We've got mortgages, man.
Yeah. And like, honestly, the more like people want to pay you for things when they appreciate what the knowledge that you have. And the more I've gotten my career, the less wary I've been about charging what I intend to charge, because I know my thing's worth it. But on the other hand, I have to get more people. You have to get a lot of people to understand that your thing is worth it. So when you're putting 1,000 people a week, which is about what I do, through your funnel, if you put 1,000 people a week through your funnel, like you have to have a system to make sure that the fans of the work actually funnel out properly and become fans. And that means they have to read your stuff. I mean, I know I talked a lot about the complete creative, and that is like, that is a huge part of me. But like, I'm a writer, like I make my living as a writer. So like, I have to get people to read the work that I put out.
Yeah. Well, I hope you've all enjoyed this talk with Russell Nolte. I know that I have. He is a very unique character that's got a lot to say and a lot of good knowledge for us to take in. So, Russell, thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Thank you for having me.
You are very, very welcome. All right, everyone. Well, if you enjoyed the show, please hit the little like button down there in the corner. If you want to hear more of us, hit the subscribe button. That way you'll know next time we do a show. I think we've got a week or two off here. Since everyone's on vacation, I decided that I'm going to take a little break too, but we'll be back in 2 weeks and have more great content for everybody. Until next time, we'll see you later.
Thank you for listening to Spilling Ink.